Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. This hour is an empowerment hour. We're going to talk about how a plant suppresses cancer and reduces tumors by 70%, and how rhodiola can optimize health and allow you to live a longer life, and how a Peruvian maca can make an enormous difference. What does it do? I'll explain. And running can help repair some types of brain damage. I'll share that. And from our public health segment, I'm going to talk about how finally, I'm glad to see this, and I commend Dr. Alan Schwartz for putting this in Scientific America. This means that a whole lot of scientists in the public health field, from psychologists and behavioralists to psychiatrists, they read this. Big Pharma's manufactured epidemic, the misdiagnosis of ADHD. Finally, it's seeping in to mainstream mindset. Also today, in a speech that was leaked through WikiLeaks, Hillary Clinton promises the bankers, I'm going to stand up against any pot legalization in all senses of the word. Really? Well, that's not what you told a whole lot of millennials that you wanted to have vote for you, so we'll explore that. And then I'm going to give you the latest statistic of why those who support the war on drugs are really doing a disservice to humanity. And where do you think 60% of the U.S. government's billions of dollars in public relations campaign goes? I'll give you the latest on that. And what does it mean when Tim McCain goes on a rant about how bad immigration is? You know, they're coming across the border. You would have thought it was Donald Trump. Sounded just like him. But we don't hear that. Did he change? No. You'll hear it. And also, we were inundated in the last week with information about how Assad is killing all of his citizens in Aleppo. Not true. That behind all the leaked WikiLeaks emails about Clinton is Vladimir Putin in Russia. Not true. No proof at all. And what is going on the ground? I did an entire one-hour special with someone in Aleppo, in Syria, telling you the truth. I'm going to add into that. A UN council just returned, and I'm going to have just one of the people who is speaking on this, so you can hear an audio clip from someone who has no political or ideological agenda. They're just on the ground looking for facts, not excluding anyone. You'll hear from her. And also, so we're supposed to elect someone for president because they have experience? They have a war record to prove that they're fit to be commander-in-chief? Why don't we take a closer look at that war record and see what it really tells us? These are the issues we're going to address today. If time permits, I will have open calls on some of these issues. Let's begin. There's a plant, it's called the neem, N-E-E-M. And here's the latest on what it does. There's an oil that you can get from the plant. It's been used for a long time, for hundreds and hundreds of years, for its medicinal use. Now, a group of Singapore academics have stated that the active compounds in the neem plant reduces the size of prostate tumors by up to 70% and suppresses its spread and metastasis by 50%. The team of international researchers led by a Professor Asethi from the Department of Pharmacology at Yonglo Lin School of Medicine at the National University in Singapore reported the findings of a 12-week study, and they said it had enormous benefit. So what they do is they take the leaf and they extract the oil, from the plant, and it's been used in hair care products and insect repellents, but now it's for prostate cancer. So all the people looking for something to add to your other ways of approaching cancer, you can do this. Now, I've recommended neem extract for people suffering from bacterial infections, fungal infections, who have high levels of inflammation, because neem is known to be antibacterial, antifungal. It's good for yeast. It's good for turning off inflammation in your joints. It's good for antihistamine for people going through hay fever season or pollen. It's an antiviral. All the people that I counsel, which has been well over 1,200 people with AIDS-defining illnesses, I always put them on natural antiviral compounds, including neem. And it's also antimicrobial. It contains very high levels of carotenoids, and it provides high levels of antioxidants. Quote, although the diverse anti-cancer effects of neem have been reported in different cancer types, its potential effect on prostate cancer initiation and progression have not been demonstrated in scientific studies. In this research, we have demonstrated that the nimbolide, which is from the neem, can inhibit tumor cell viability, a cellular process that directly affects the ability of a cell to proliferate, grow, divide, or repair damaged cell components and induce programmed cell death in prostate cancer cells. End quote. So you see, in just lay language, cell invasion and migration are key steps during tumor metastasis. This study revealed that the nimbolide, which is from the active ingredient from the neem, can significantly suppress cell invasion and migration of prostate cancer cells. That tells me that it has an ability to reduce tumor metastasis without exhibiting any significant adverse effects. So that's good. Something good to help people in natural and non-toxic. Something else to help people to optimize longevity and enhance their health. It is the very important, very, very positive impact of the adaptogenic rhodiola. R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, rhodiola. It can enhance your longevity by preventing immune system decline. And while adaptogens like ginseng, which is very good, and gotu-kola, which is also good, and dong quai, which is spectacular, most commonly used herb in the world for women, not much in America, but elsewhere. Well, these adaptogens have been used for thousands of years, and researchers are finally starting to pay attention. Now, rhodiola is an adaptogenic herb, and it helps the body to effectively respond to stress. However, not all adaptogens are the same. Rhodiola happens to hold some pretty impressive benefits. For example, it can extend the quality of life, and that's crucial for any of these, as does, by the way, ginkgo. So if you're looking to protect your body from premature aging, I would suggest, along with everything else you're doing, include this adaptogen, because it has phenomenal results on protecting human cells from oxidation. And premature aging comes from oxidative stress. And there's a compound in rhodiola. It's called saladroicide, and it's responsible for its anti-aging mechanisms. For example, a study was done that showed that this particular extract was able to preserve skin cells and help produce healthier skin. And it was thought, as we age, our immune system declines through a process called immune senescence, which is end of life, which makes it difficult for the body to defend itself when you get older meaning over the age of 40, from a variety of invading forces like bacteria and viruses. Or rhodiola works in the body through different pathways as a way to give the body what it needs to age healthfully without the negative effects associated with a compromised immune system. I found something last night. In our office, we had about 40 cases, and it was taking up space. And so they were going to send them to a locker for storage. And I said, what's in there? And so we opened a box, and there I saw something I had never seen before. Never saw it. It was when I was debating the Surgeon General, Jocelyn Elders, very nice woman, on PBS. And so I just put it in. I was watching it. And I'm talking about premature aging, and where there's a doctor from the Pritikin program, a scientist, talking about we can't really reverse aging. And I shared a difference of opinion. We can. We have the mechanisms. And explained what I'm saying now, that there is no disease normal to aging. But you immediately say Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, osteoporosis, osteoarthritis, a failed immune system, loss of libido, erectile dysfunction, loss of muscle mass, crepey skin. Still not correct. Those are not normal to the aging process. Those are normal to the diseasing process. Big difference. Because when you are eating and drinking the wrong things, your body does not have the restorative capacity it had when you were younger. And it's not that younger people are able to rejuvenate. That's a myth. Younger people have more cells waiting in line. So as you shoot one set of cells with alcohol and binge drinking, 32% of New Yorkers binge drink, by the way. So, wow, that's a high percentage. Just saw that statistic yesterday. And if one glass of alcohol destroys a million brain cells, liver cells, kidney cells, and heart cells, heart alcohol, imagine if you had two or three and you had it on a Friday night or Saturday night, you're going to take the cells you do have and you're going to get rid of a whole generation of them. So a year later, you're not 30 years old, you're 60. So it seems like you've gotten away with it because you still have youthful complexion and you still have your hair and you still have your nails and your muscle mass. But that's an illusion. That's like saying, I got $1 million in the bank when I was one. And I wasn't breastfed and I grew up drinking colas and eating the typical American confections and snacks and treats. And I exercised when I was in school, but not now. And I'm stressed. I'm living at my computer all the time, and my cell phone never leaves my hand or body. And so I guess I'm okay. No, you've spent about $200,000 from your million. Now, you still got more to spend, so you may not even notice that you're reducing your bank account until you're in your 40s. Then you will. Then you start seeing how much of the biochemical, hormonal, enzymatic, bioelectrical energies you have exhausted. Till one day you get up and you say, gee whiz, we're all aging, you know, and we can't slow it down, we can't stop it, it's inevitable. Wrong. You can slow it down substantially. In the fact you not only can slow it down, but many of you who are 60, 65, 70, 50, 55, you can take 20 years off that biological aging if you do the right things. So that's one of the things that this one herb, rhodiola, does. And it also helps you avoid chronic fatigue. It's very good for calming the nerves. So if you're stressed out and you're secreting the stress hormone cortisol, not only is that herb able to help that, but it's able to keep some of the side effects from happening. Because when you get too much cortisol and you're on stress, you're going to be fatigued. You burn out your immune system. So it helps your heart too. One of the more surprising benefits of this adaptogenic herb is its ability to supply cardiovascular health. And remember I mentioned there's that one salidroside, which is the particular active ingredient that we know about in rhodiola. What's also been shown to protect the arteries from endothelial dysfunction, and that's very good, because think of all the people suffering from high blood pressure, 70 million Americans minimally, and high blood pressure destroys your epithelium and produces stroke, so this can help you if you have high blood pressure, prone to stroke or heart disease. So just one more piece to the puzzle, but at least it's helpful. And also, there's benefits to the Peruvian MACA, M-A-C-A. And I'll just go through some that we now know from the scientific literature. It enhances the LH level in the body, the luteinizing hormone. That's important. It increases testosterone levels. For men, wow, what does that mean? It means faster recovery from sports injuries. It means more energy, stamina, and endurance. It means massive libido and sexual boost. That's primarily why it's used in Peru. It increases the quality of your skin, and it allows your body to deal with stress better, and it allows faster muscle gain and boosts muscle growth, and it improves mental health, and it relieves symptoms of PMS. So that is very important. So we want to be able to get more maca. Doesn't have the best taste. It's an acquired taste, but what I do, I just put it in with all my other powder. I call it my mud in the morning, because when people see me at the retreats and they what's Gary eating? And so they come in the kitchen and I show them. And I don't show them how much I use, because I don't want them, you know, I don't want them trying to do what I do, because my body's adapted to it. But I will take maybe 16 different powders, plus multiple oils, plus multiple nut and seed butters. This morning it was fresh pumpkin seed butter, sunflower seed butter. Now, when we use the word butter, it's not butter. It merely means they have pulverized. They've blended up the nut or seed, so it's no longer something you chew. It has a very soft texture, which, by the way, makes it really easier to digest for people who have ileitis, Crohn's disease, diverticulitis, who couldn't have nuts or seeds. Then all the other enzymatic compounds go in, and it is very dark. It looks like mud. And then you put it in a bowl and you dilute it with whatever the beverage is, apple juice. And apple juice is a great, great juice to drink. But I can still taste the maca. So I never suggest people use maca by itself. A little strong and a little off-putting, but boy, is it good. And for diabetics, it improves glucose tolerance, and it improves thyroid function. People have hypothyroidism. And it really helps reverse estrogen dominance. Now, think of all the people who are overweight. That's estrogen dominance. Meat in the diet, chicken, estrogen dominance, stress, estrogen dominance. Now just imagine that you're a person that's overweight, you're on a high-protein diet to lose the weight, and you're stressed because you're overweight. You have three different ways that the body is dominating with estrogen. All can produce cancer, and do. So you want to reduce this, and rhodiola helps do that, or maca helps you do that. And if you have headaches and depression and anxiety from PMS symptoms, maca helps that as well. And it's terrific for perimenopause and postmenopausal women. So add that to one of these just really terrific nutrients. And that is the latest on Health and Healing. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting video streaming from New York. We have a lot to share with you. If you are listening over the telephone, and a whole lot of people are, let me give you a new number. I keep adding numbers. You'll have about 10. And the reason I'm doing this is simple. Right now, this program that you're listening to is the number one listened radio program in the world over the telephone or a portable listening device. In fact, we just got a chart. It had all the different major players in there, Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, Alex Jones, all these. We were number one, not just number one, but we took up 28% of the chart. So we got a lot of people listening. And then a lot of people are now using their cell phones to go to the archives and download programs that they may have missed at noon, Monday to Friday, Eastern Standard Time, and they want to listen at night. And they're out, and they want to listen over their cell phone, put it on speaker, in their car, driving. Truck drivers, cab drivers. So many people tell me they do this. Let me give you our archive listening number, and here is the listen live at noon. The listen live number is 231-423-1309. Again, 231-423-1309. And what has happened is we had so many people wanting to listen that a lot of people couldn't get on. The bandwidth had been filled. So they keep adding more phone numbers because the bandwidth keeps expanding because we have so many more people. Then if you want to listen to the archives, that number is different. Write this down, please. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. And I've reintroduced my talkback program on Tuesdays from 8 to 9 and Sundays 8 to 9. So no guests, no commentaries, just addressing people's questions, issues for an hour. It's fun. I want to share with you my concerns, and I would like to hear your solutions. Remember, solutions. I believe that one of the worst things that could have ever happened was a war on drugs. For a lot of reasons. There's a lot of different reasons people take drugs. But clearly one of the reasons is never discussed. And that is the ghettoization of America, where we have forgotten large segments of the American population. When a corporation was there, factories were there, jobs were there for decades, for generations, two, three, four generations. And then someone comes along and decides, why should we be paying these people this wage when we could get this same product made in China or somewhere else for 10% of that, saving 90%? We don't have to worry about unions. We don't have to worry about healthcare. We don't have to worry about environmental dumping, where our byproduct goes. And then it began. And it actually began in the mid-70s. It was done in tandem with the corporate raiders, the green mailers, the people who would buy stock in a company and then blackmail them into giving them lots of money to get out because they demanded change. Isn't it interesting? One of the reasons we're in trouble today is because of what I call larger corporations buying competitors, creating these monopolies and trusts, and therefore they can charge what they want. They have enormous power, political power, and social power. And because who's going to want to get angry, this person that employs 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000 people? So society allowed them to cause more than 100,000 corporations, factories to close down and leave. 30 million Americans, more or less, over a 45-year period, had to get other jobs. And I went to Camden, New Jersey, considered the toughest city in America, very, very poor. I saw people that didn't even have a door on their home. The lack of money in the budget doesn't allow for the services people need. But I spoke with the people all day long, block after block, house after house. I wanted to find out what it was like. And they would. Guy went out and said, "See that big sign there? It was the sign for RCA, and they used to be there. The shipbuilding, largest in America, was there." Campbell Soup was there. They had all these major brand names there for a long time. But when they left, they didn't think about the people they were leaving behind, the economic circumstances, the educational circumstances. What do you have when schools are paid for by the community dollars and the property values, and now the property values have sunk? Nobody wants to move there. And if you don't provide services, if you don't provide basic services, if you allow the garbage to pile up, if you don't fill the potholes, and then you're going to have those people who would take advantage of it. Gangs move in, and they begin to victimize the locals, people. The vast majority of gang violence is about how they can use, manipulate, take advantage of helpless people in poor communities. But America walks away from this problem. They don't want to look at it. They don't want to take any responsibility. So you cannot talk about the impact that we're on drugs without talking about the underlying economic circumstances that contributed to it. There's a lot of contributions, not just one. But then we end up getting the Clintons, Bill Clinton, who wanted to curry favor with the Republicans, and he put into place this incredible crime bill. That then, guess who the spokesperson of that bill was? Hillary Clinton. Remember when she said, you know, bring him to heel, these predators? Well, you bring a dog to heel when you grab the leash and when you're training a dog. You don't bring a human being to heel. Human beings shouldn't be ever trained like a dog. We treat dogs better than we treat many human beings and entire classes of people, in my opinion. And so then, how much good did you do for the American society by locking up mainly people of color, discriminating against them based upon sentencing compared to a same crime committed by a Caucasian, and then the poor's filling prisons versus the rich? So unless you take all that into consideration, you're doing a disservice. Now, here's what it comes down to. This is the latest statistics as of just an hour ago. There's an arrest for drug possession every 25 seconds, and marijuana arrests exceed those of all other violent crimes. So you're putting people every 25 seconds into handcuffs, changing their life, but not just their life, changing the life of their family members, changing what's going to happen when they get out of that criminal justice system. For just possessing marijuana, that's what they're doing. So that's one part of it. So where is the humanity? Where's the care for other people? It's easy to say anything politically to get elected. It's something else to honor your words and promises. But then there's more. Because here is a leaked speech. This is what WikiLeaks gave us. Quote, WikiLeaks has arguably been the most important thing that has happened in elections, if not the veneer of democracy in quite a long time. In Hillary Clinton, we see a figure beholden to Wall Street, working diligently to advance the influential corporations over government policy and taxpayer money. Her mega donor list is a who's who of mega banks that also had to benefit the TARP government bailout. In return for their money, Clinton gave speeches to Wall Street giants behind closed doors between 2013 and 2015. She told Goldman Sachs, quote, she was, quote, far removed from the ordinary person, and that, quote, you need both a public and a private position. Clinton also told them that she supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership, irrespective of what she had to tell the people to mollify them. And when she got the big gifts from the big donors, she was 100% on TPP, not against it. So then she says, quote, I stand against pot legalization in all senses of the word. Okay. Do you realize how many millions of people you are against, and you're willing to see them criminalized? You're willing to see them go to prison? Where's the irony? Nixon launched the war on drugs in 1971. It has cost us more than $1 trillion. $1 trillion. We're spending so much money on the war on drugs, and what do we get? Obama said in 2009 the war on drugs was counterproductive. He has done absolutely positively nothing. He did not tell his attorney general to let those people out of prison, expunge their records. He could do that even now. He won't. In cases of heroin, cocaine, and pot, the purity and quality has increased gradually since 1990 to about 60% increase in purity. And for heroin, it's 161% in pot also. And the street prices have dropped, meaning that there's so much supply that demand has caused 85% adjustment in price. It means it's very easy, very inexpensive to get a drug. How much money do they make? The international drug trade is $320 billion a year. Studies indicate that the rapid increase in prescription drug use among teenagers is the rise in illegal drugs. So kids are starting off by taking legal drugs, like ADHD drugs, Ritalin, and then feeling, what's the big deal? I'm already taking these drugs. Why can't I have those drugs? 1 in 5 in state prisons and 50% in federal prisons are there serving time for drug possession. Right now, we have over 2.1 million people in our justice system, 1.3 million in state prisons, and 16% of those are drug offenses. And just look at the racist element in the war on drugs. African Americans are about 38% of all arrests, and are all Americans, and yet they're 80% of all the people go to prison. So disproportionate. In New York City alone, in 1 year, there was 85,000 arrests for just drug possession. We're not talking about violent crime. And they target the poor because the poor have to plead out. The poor can't hire lawyers. A Harvard study says legalizing drugs would benefit the nation by $65 billion annually, and this would also cut the Mexican cartel's revenue. And remember, it's the war on drugs that brought us the brutal gangs and the killers and the destruction of so much. So what we should have, in my opinion, is we should have in every community in America, we should have state and federal sponsored humanistic, holistic drug rehabilitation programs where no records are kept, where you're not tracking a person so you can isolate them and in some way identify them as a potential threat to society. You expunge the records. You let every nonviolent criminal out of prison. They're doing no one good, themselves, their families, nor society, in that environment. If you want to do something constructive, look at Norway. Look at Denmark, where prisoners can go out, they can work, they can be with their family, they come back, because they know that sooner or later a prisoner has to reenter society. Don't you want someone who's going to be constructive and a positive influence? Or do you want someone who's been beaten and raped, subjugated to the law of the jungle of the culture in prisons? You're going to get one or the other. And so other more civilized societies have realized we shouldn't be punishing people. We should be helping them rehabilitate from anything they have done that society says they shouldn't. And then the hypocrisy. Alcohol does far worse to the human body than marijuana. You see no studies on hard alcohol benefiting the heart, the brain, the liver, the kidneys, the eyes. It does just the opposite. And yet I can show you 15,000 scientific references in the government's own official library of medicine on medicinal values in marijuana. Yet the government can't find one to allow it to change its classification. That's politics, plain and simple. So that's what we're dealing with. I'd like your thoughts. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And who do you think's behind all this? Who do you think does not want drugs legalized? The pharmaceutical industry, the opiate makers, those who make OxyContin, which is a killing drug, and the drugs that are sold legally at astronomical prices. The alcohol industry doesn't want it, and they have lobbyists, and those lobbyists hire people for speeches, and then there's Wall Street that funds and has backing and interest in alcohol companies and pharmaceutical companies. So when Hillary Clinton says, if I'm president, no way we're gonna legalize pot, under any circumstances. You know why she's saying it now. And before we get your calls on this, didn't at one time Barack Obama tell us what he believed was his honest and objective evaluation of Hillary Clinton when he was the outsider coming in to challenge her? Here's what Barack Obama once said about Hillary Clinton.
This is the same person who has taken more money from lobbyists than any other candidate, Democratic or Republican, taking more money from drug company lobbyists and insurance company lobbyists. This is the same person who says she's voting for the Columbia trade deal. Turns out that her top advisor, her top strategist, was working for the Colombian government to get the bill passed. This is the same person who spent a decade with her husband campaigning for NAFTA and now goes around saying how she was opposed to NAFTA. This is the same person who took money from financial folks on Wall Street and then voted for a bankruptcy bill that makes it harder for folks right here in Pennsylvania to get a fair shake. Hillary Clinton's out there, you know, like she's out in the duck blind every Sunday. She's packing a six-shooter. Come on. She knows better. That's some politics being played by Hillary Clinton.
Okay. And I couldn't be prouder of the thing.
Okay, that was then. What happened? She didn't change. She still believed in those things. She supported, when she was Secretary of State, she threatened them with economic sanctions if they didn't support genetically modified food. She supports Monsanto. Monsanto's top person, one of their top people, is running her camp, one of the top runners of her campaign. So which is it? Is she the person who should take your place? Then what have you become? So this is important. But then she brags about being the person who you want to make the call to at 3 o'clock in the morning. Really? Well, you think your experience justifies your running for president, being elected? Let's hear about that experience.
Hillary Clinton wants to be commander-in-chief, and she has more foreign policy experience than anyone running for president. She even brags about it when she can.
Yeah, I was very flattered when Henry Kissinger said I ran the State Department better than anybody had run it in a long time.
But she might not want to name drop a guy who orchestrated coups, propped up dictators, and probably violated international law. And experience isn't the same thing as success. What's Clinton's track record when it comes to U.S. intervention abroad, and why does it matter? Everyone knows that back in 2002, Senator Clinton voted for the invasion of Iraq. Even though she now admits that it was a mistake, has she learned from it? Well, her actions at the State Department are telling. Let's start with the bombing of Libya during the Arab Spring. Clinton was the Obama administration's most influential advocate in toppling the Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Using flawed intelligence from Libyan opposition leaders, she pressured President Obama to join coalition forces, despite resistance from members of his cabinet. Following the death of Gaddafi, NATO bombing ended, but Clinton had no strategy for securing the country after his overthrow. The chaos that followed, free-flowing weapons and armed militias, have turned Libya into a country with competing governments, no rule of law, and a growing ISIS presence. Still, the former Secretary of State seems to be proud of her role in regime change in Libya.
Libya actually held elections. They elected moderates. They have tried to piece together a government against a lot of really serious challenges.
But Libya isn't the only case of Clinton's militaristic approach. Whenever the Obama administration was divided about using force, Clinton was on team intervention. She repeatedly advocated for the 2009 decision to send thousands of troops to continue the war in Afghanistan. Vice President Joe Biden and others opposed it. But even after leaving the State Department, Clinton has been vocal in her readiness to take on conflict around the world. When it comes to Iran, Clinton's publicly supported diplomacy and the deal. But at a time when the U.S. is dropping sanctions, Clinton says there should be new ones.
which is really a very retrograde posture, something that's not shared by pretty much anyone within the Democratic Party.
On Syria, Clinton's distanced herself from Obama. She's called for a more aggressive approach, including a no-fly zone, more airstrikes, more special ops, and
ground forces actually taking back more territory from ISIS.
Then there's Latin America. Clinton's record points to leadership that talks a big game on democracy, but behind the scenes isn't all that interested in it. In 2009, she condoned a coup in Honduras, even though the United Nations and others condemned it. Clinton secretly negotiated with coup leaders to ensure fast elections and that the former president would not return. Since then, Honduras has been rife with drug violence and police corruption. It has the highest homicide rate in the world, which is part of the reason so many migrants have become U.S. asylum seekers. Given all that, who's Clinton hoping to attract with this record?
It's very difficult to perceive who within the Democratic primary electorate she's trying to woo over with an extremely hostile and antagonistic foreign policy.
So, is Hillary the commander-in-chief the Democrats want, and that America really...
And keep in mind, anyone who has studied her relationship with Israel, and especially the radical Likud party under Netanyahu, it is my belief, from all that I have seen, that this would be a green light for Israel to invade, with not by land forces, but by aerial bombardment, by first primarily taking out their electrical grid and then nuking them. You couldn't go in and just do regular bombs over their nuclear facilities. That would not suffice. They would have to have a substantial program maximizing damage, knowing the United States would cover for them. You're talking about a country with 84 million people. You're talking about a country that has a lot of moderates and progressive and educated young people. And she would alienate all of them. And what do you think would be the reaction of the rest of the world to that, towards America, for supplying all the munitions, the bombs, the jets, everything, and then being thereafter Iran has been decimated? I just say, now don't do anything stupid in return. No, you can't go in and create massive genocide on a nation of people who have not done anything. They haven't invaded anyone in over 240 years, and expect no blowback. And yet that's what I predict if she's elected. Now, who does that benefit? The 200,000 corporations, private contracting corporations, that are part of the military-industrial and intelligence complex. They would really benefit tremendously. Oh, and her running mate, the guy who wants as many Latino votes and it's just so open-armed and says, friends, we are for you. Really? Tim Kaine, you're for Latinos? You're for immigrants? That's what you're saying now everywhere you go? Could have fooled me.
I'm deeply opposed to illegal immigration, and I call on the federal government, the president, and the immigration services to stop the influx of illegal immigrants into this country. And I've supported wise state policies to try to make sure that we do not provide services to folks in this state who are not here legally unless public health or safety demands it. But there is a serious local problem in Northern Virginia caused by the federal government's intentional policy of not enforcing the immigration laws. Folks congregate on a street corner in Herndon, and Herndon local elected officials decided that the best thing to do was to have them come indoors. I wouldn't support state efforts for that.
So now which is it, Tim, what you were stating publicly then or now that you're vice presidential candidate now? It can't be both unless you had an epiphany, a transformation. I'm Gary Nall. The hypocrisy runs thick in this fermented brew we call an election process that lacks any transparency, honesty, openness, or vitalism. Allow over 41% of Americans who are independent to seek those party candidates that represent the people and not special interest groups. Now, let's take your calls. Let's say hello to Brad. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Good.
I've been following you. I assisted putting your office in under Paul and Andre. Anyway, let's move on. This drug war thing, it's such a farce. What they do here, what they do quite often on the street level or on the precinct level is they don't, the narcotics detectives and regular police, they don't necessarily go around looking for the drug dealers and to stop the drug trade. They want to get the little guy. And you say, well, why? Why wouldn't you go after these couple medium or big dealers? Or, well, they say, well, with these arrests of the little guys, it gets us, you know, a little star on our belt, and then we get more funding for next year. What good is that? You're doing this to keep the funding going so that you can continue to mishandle this? It's of no value. It's not getting the drug dealers off the street in any means.
It's not just getting the drug dealers off the street. That's not the point. I believe, Brad, and I appreciate you giving us your input, I believe we have to go to why people are taking drugs. What are the circumstances, both personal and psychological, as well as societal, that create the foundation for that process? We're not looking deep enough into this. I appreciate your call. Thank you, Brad. And let's say hello to Jack. Jack, your turn.
Hey, Jack. I'm sorry. Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Good.
I've been against, drugs for a long time, but the thing of it is, you've seen it increase and increase in the 60s and 70s, and you find out that the big people, Ollie North, is bringing it in, and, you know, poor people are going to jail. Now, if you legalized it, the government would realize a great benefit monetarily. The illegal drug trade, all the deaths involved would be eliminated, and you would save a lot of money in that you don't have to fund the war on drugs. But at the same time, it's a double-edged sword. You've got young people who have been dumbed down through the educational system, the new math, the new reading. They're the ones that might not necessarily benefit. And so it's a double-edged sword.
Okay, Jack, let's look at the primary issue that you've raised, and it's a good, insightful, and I appreciate it. When you ask a young person today, why are you using drugs? Is it just is a kick, peer pressure, you're stressed? You're going to get a lot of different answers. And then ask, is this likely to continue? Are you going to do it a couple times and say, okay, I did that, don't want to do it anymore? Or is it something else that you're trying to replace in your life and the drug takes that edge off? When I ask people working on Wall Street that I've counseled, and they didn't even think that cocaine was bad because so many people on Wall Street use it. They also didn't think it was unusual to work 18 hours a day and not have a life and live completely out of balance, then wonder why they're fatigued at 27 years of age. Just counseled someone recently with that. And they say, go into almost every bathroom on Wall Street and people are just doing coke. No one thinks it's a big deal. They don't even hide it because it's a natural energy. Well, it's not natural. And in any sense, and it's extremely destructive to the brain, to the nasal cavities, etc. But they have accepted this as an alternative approach instead of working normal hours and not working under stress, or even working using your talents and skills and your education in a different way for a different group, a different place. But when you got a mass of people who are churning from the same type of educational and social culture in the same boiling pot, you're going to have a lot of common use. So what if we opened up some therapy houses and allowed people to experience who are highly stressed or anxious, experience some virtual reality de-stressing techniques where you sit in a chair, you put on what looks like a goggles, and suddenly whatever is stressing you, and you have a choice of programs, you can see as if you're part of this virtual reality to completely de-stress, to take the pain, the anger, the rage out of your life and replace it with something that is comforting and positive. Now, there's no downside to that. There's only allowing you to understand that you don't have to act out negatively to something in your life you cannot control. And then you can be distressed, just like doing mindful meditation. Now, the person that can do mindful meditation, they can be mindfully meditating any place they're at. Or the person that is in that mindful meditation when they're doing their yoga and they're de-stressed. Every single study shows the power of mind-body when you're doing yoga and mindful meditation. There's also a great program out now showing that when you're running, you're relaxing and de-stressing. It's one of the best ways in the world to de-stress. That's why a lot of people after work go to a gym, even late at night. And when I was walking back from the New York Film Festival last night, I saw a film. Whoa. I don't like to give negative reviews because that's my own personal perspective, and I'd rather give positive reviews with the hope that people might enjoy something. I don't want to keep people from watching something that they might like, and I didn't, but I saw a film. I had no idea what the meaning of the film was. It was just discombobulated from reality. But anyhow, my walk back was more enjoyable than the film. But I noticed when I walked by a gym, there were people exercising. You can see them on Broadway. You can see them at 96th Street. You can see them at 80th Street. You can see them at all these gyms. And they're on those treadmills. They're pounding it. Why? Because they're going to lose some weight? No. They're de-stressing from being in a pressure cooker all day. We need natural and non-toxic ways of emoting. We need weekend trips. Why not have single trips where single socializing of all ages, senior socializing, and getting into the country, having places to go where you can go and learn of different ways of living and socializing and be near nature. What about, you know, doing picnics? You know, having a picnic where one group go in and prepare all the food so you don't get any, you know, bad food, but all the food's nice and vegan and everybody comes to spend the day just picnicking, socializing. Wouldn't that be great? People of all ages, no one's excluded, everyone's included, meet new friends, and you de-stress. Being around animal and wildlife, nature, that's great. You can do all these things as long as you have some options and alternative ways of looking at the problems in life. If we don't offer these things, people won't recognize how trapped they are in the paradigm that they're a part of. So I would add that in, too, to what you were suggesting, Jack, and I appreciate your call. Is your name Hadalis?
Hi, Gary. It's Hadalus.
Hadalus.
Hi, Gary. Gary, you know, everything you're saying for adults, but I believe that we have to start with the very young, and as our kids don't have anything, I mean, there's nothing out there for them to do. So they begin their childhood in depression. And they internalize this idea that, hey, one day I'm going to prison. And they see it around them, and this is what children believe. Children believe and will do what they see. So there's no place right now in most of our cities, I would say practically all of them, for kids to go. There are no skating rinks. There are no beautiful parks, you know, in the poor areas. You know, there's just, you know, depression, you know, buildings that look like somebody bombed them. And then this whole program of just say no to drugs. Stupidity, Gary, because there's nothing to say yes to. You got to give kids alternatives. You know, the schools don't talk about, you know, activities for kids. The monies have been cut to the bone marrow for school trips. There's nothing for the kids to do in the inner city, poor kids, which is where we have, you know, this tremendous problem of kids getting arrested very young, you know, because drugs are the only thing. I guess they see
okay.
it as...
Okay, you rightly have suggested, stated the problem. And I agree with you. Here's what I would suggest, and here's what I'm able to do personally. Let's work with the city and get them to donate a block, one block that's been abandoned, and let them clear it down, take it all down to the ground, and then let's we in this audience, build an ideal space for children, green space, living foods, hydroponic house, the They could be four stories high. So you supply the entire community food, have crafts, have dance, folk dancing, all kinds of dancing, have skills, have counseling. So if a kid is shy or a kid is feel left out or kids feel that somehow they're neglected or abused in their environment, they'll have people that can work with them. It's open to the children. It's meant for the children. Everything that a child needs in helping them grow and define their own life, they'll have. Safe, it can be used 24/7, whatever a child's need is. You could have holistic therapists there as well, and even a community child care program. So when parents are going to work, they can bring their children there, and they'll have a great environment for the kid to be in while a parent is work, and do it as a community service so it doesn't come out of the parent's pay. I'm willing to work on that. I'm willing to help fund that. I need other people, however, with all I'm doing, I need other people to also call the city. We have people from every walk of life listening to this program. So if we all work together, we could make this happen. And once we do one block and show the miracle of a block and make sure that the block is the worst block and the worst area of the city. So if you can take from the worst and make it magnificent, joyful, fun, even bring in farm animals, you know, miniature goats and sheep and lambs and deer, and let them see these are creatures they can love, and they're not there to eat. And let them understand where food comes from. Let them understand where disease comes from. Show, you know, have classes that kids can learn from. Let them see the world. Bring teachers in from the Museum of Natural History, can talk about the universe we live in history, and set up screens where they can see the everything from the dinosaurs forward and how we evolved. Kids love this. Kids are sponges for information and insight. And then whatever a kid's needs are, you have people involved who in the community who would help that child and their family. Does that make sense to you?
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Makes perfect sense. And I've seen it, by the way. There are cities that have that. And the investment
Let's do it. Now, let's do this. You start a website, all right? When you get the website up, for people who would like to volunteer to make this happen, because there's all different types. You've got architects, you've got builders, you've got planners, you've got people within the city who are listening right now who can help us, which agency we go to. It'll take a while, and that's fine. If it takes a year, that's fine. But a year from now or 2 years from now, we'll have it. Look, remember when I told you one day when I was looking at this homeless vet sleeping in this under a tree and a T-shirt in February when it was 40 degrees, and there were 16,000 in the woods near Titusville, been forgotten by society. And one of the guys says, so what are you going to do? You're just going to make a film, and how's that going to help us? I said, no, I'll help you. Well, I did that film, and I send a check to the Daily Bread down in Titusville to help them, feed them every day, or as much as my money can help them. And I did three films. But then I went to a sergeant major who was in this little motel unit, and boy, the food was terrible and it was old, but he was doing the best he could do. Man, is that man a hero in my eyes. And he was helping some people, but they were smoking and they had a curfew, he would try to get them work, and they could live there for 30 days, but after 30 days, they'd move on. When you can only help 12 people, and I said, what if I build a place that is free to help homeless vets, but they're getting holistic therapy? He said, man, count me in. That's built. That's done now. Took a while, but it's not a crappy little hotel unit. It's beautiful. Why not, right? Why not give a nice, beautiful, pristine environment for people who need some joy and happiness and care and love in their life? So in my world, everything I do is focused upon finding solutions to these problems. But you must be patient. You must be cooperative. You must work together. You must focus upon the goal of, can we get this done? How do we get it done? And so I'm there to support this. I will see that it gets done. if I have other people working with me. And I'll put up my own money to see that this oasis for children in need in the ghetto gets accomplished. Are you with me?
I like it, yes.
Okay, you create the site so we have a place for everyone to go to, and then it begins. All right? And if for any reason you can't create the site, just let me know, and we'll find someone who will create a site, and that way we can have hundreds or thousands of people from this audience joining together, working cooperatively for the common good for the children. That's my pledge. How about that, right? Name me once I've ever given my word that I've taken it back or it hasn't happened. So let's make it happen. All right? I'm in 100%. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.